Good morning. Anthony asked if I'd be willing to provide a new parent's perspective and to think back about what I prayed and hoped for in those earliest days after our baby was born. I agreed, but I told Brandon that he had to help me. So, a little over a year ago, we became first-time parents with the birth of our son, Harrison. The night before we were supposed to be discharged from the hospital, just as we were finishing up a little celebration dinner, the cardiologist came in and told us that they had identified a problem with Harry's heart. We wouldn't be taking him home with us the next day. He was being transferred to the NICU so they could monitor him more closely to make sure that he was getting enough oxygen in his blood flow. And he would need to have surgery to try to fix his pulmonary valve that hadn't formed properly. So in those earliest days, our prayers were for healing and for our baby to be safe. When we drove home the day I was discharged, the car seat that we had installed in the back was empty, and driving away from the hospital while our baby was still there may have been the hardest thing we've ever done. Harry's first car ride was in an ambulance, where they put all 6.5 pounds of him inside a giant transport container covered in cords and monitors. It looked just like a spaceship. I rode with him to the NICU at Columbia Children's Hospital in New York, and we waited for a space to open in the schedule for him to have his procedure. And when the time came, when we walked down with his bed to an operating room where a bunch of doctors and nurses were going to run a catheter up from Harry's tiny leg and into his heart and inflate the tiniest balloon to stretch out the valve inside.
So to make what might seem like a little detour from all of that, Harry was born on Thursday, June 23rd, 2016, and earlier that week, the Cleveland Cavaliers had won the NBA championship. Megan and I grew up in Ohio, and we've been watching the series with more than casual interest. So for those of you who don't follow these things, just to give you a sense of the dynamics, LeBron James had come back to the Cavs after playing a few seasons on a different team. LeBron grew up in Ohio, and when he was a junior in high school, he was already on the cover of Sports Illustrated under the headline that said, "The Chosen One." So he had come back to his hometown of Cleveland on a mission to end what had been a 50-year drought since any pro sports teams in the city had won a title. And in 2016, the Cavs were playing Golden State Warriors for the championship, the team that had beat them in the finals the year before, and that had just set a record for most ever regular season wins in the NBA. And the Cavs quickly went down 3-1 in the series, best out of 7. It was a deficit that no team in the history had ever come back from in the NBA Finals. And of course, the Cavs went on and won the next 3 games, including Game 7 on the road in Oakland. So right after the final buzzer, LeBron has collapsed on the court. He's crying. He's overcome with emotion from all the weight of expectations he's been carrying since he's a teenager. And the reporter says, "LeBron, how do you feel?" And he said he kept telling himself, "The man above doesn't put you in situations you can't handle." And some version of that became our mantra for the first week with Harry. And we never felt hopeless or failed to find the strength to take bottles of milk to the hospital in the middle of the night or sit all day with Harry in the NICU, which is really kind of a heartbreaking place full of very tiny and very sick babies.
Everything went great for Harry, and today we have a very happy, very healthy 14-month-old. In the past few weeks, he's taken his first steps, and while he's a reluctant walker, he is a very determined climber. He's completely fearless and has tried to scale furniture and moving boxes and even the other day a ladder that we foolishly left open where he could get to it.
So Harry has a few developmental milestones yet to come before he'll be contemplating the mysteries of the divine, but among the things we hope for him in the years to come is that he will embrace and be embraced by a church family that can help answer those questions when they come, and that someday he'll also be able to take strength from the Christian faith in his most challenging times.
I am going to start out by asking a question. Why are we here? And I answer myself. We are here because of our faith. Faith in God. Faith in miracles. Faith in love. How did it come to be this way? Long ago, in fact, long, 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 long ago, our predecessors started Old South Church, and then for generations, we chose to worship here. So that is where I got my faith from, and ever since I could understand, faith gave me patience and perseverance that I so often use in school. It helps me to make just decisions. My faith even helps me to forgive my mortal enemies and stay calm. My faith is everywhere that I look in life. I like having faith and someone to guide me, and this is my prayer. Dear God, please guide us during indecision, loss, and need, and please continue to love us as your sons and daughters.
I stand before you, a black woman who is truly blessed. What do I mean by blessed? I'm relatively healthy, though pretty far along in years. I have a very caring, supportive family and friends. And I've, in my youth, been provided for, and fortunately educated, having attended some of the most prestigious schools in our nation. And I'm blessed to have found a church in Old South that is truly welcoming, that allows and welcomes everyone, no matter what their belief or what their faith is, and accepts me for who I am. Yet in Anthony, Reverend Anthony asked if I would speak on faith at this point in time in life. I first thought, no, actually first I cringed. Get up and speak in front of the entire church, try to wax poetic or philosophical. But then I thought, in my youthful way, God spelled backwards is dog. And what do you think of when we first think of, or when people think of their dogs? Any thoughts? I heard love. Unconditional love. And yesterday, as I sat at a lighthouse with my partner, a beautiful day, looking at the lighthouse, in the distance, expansive ocean, beautiful puffy clouds, and jutting from the lighthouse was a rainbow. I thought, once again, that there is something so far greater and bigger than I. And while I can't say I stand before you with unconditional love, especially, you know, given the line of work that I'm in, I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I see somewhere about 100 people a week who are at the depths of despair, some wondering where their next meal is going to come from, others wondering where they're going to lay their heads to sleep at night. And then some trying to escape it all through illicit drugs that are going to destroy their lives if they haven't already. I think I still have hope, and that is my faith. And it carries me through. However, it's a dichotomy in my life, and I will still continue to try to instill in others that there is a need to be faithful, to be hopeful, and to try to strive for that unconditional love. And as perhaps not so eloquently I will say this, but perhaps George Michael, a late but popular singer, some of you may be familiar with, said, "Well, you gotta have faith, 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 baby."
Good morning. I suppose my role in today's service of the evolution of the life is the overly optimistic recent college grad. So, when I first decided to commit my career to social change and social justice, it was largely done out of a murky sense of privilege, guilt, and obligation. While I was extremely motivated, I was also exhausted. Every time I spent money on a nice dinner or new clothes, I knew that it could be better spent helping someone else. I continued to spiral down towards burnout when one of my older friends at Georgetown, a devout Catholic, finally helped me to understand the problem. She said, "You keep acting like the world is on your shoulders, that you must give out of something about you. But what motivated Jesus, what motivated the poor widow at the temple, wasn't some intellectual moral imperative. It was love. If you give out of duty, every dollar you give feels like a painful sacrifice. But if you give out of love, the gift will lighten your load and bring you more joy than you thought possible." These words struck me like lightning on a mountaintop. Embracing this new mindset, this uniquely religious mindset, has continued to help me stay motivated today. It's also a significant way that I experience God. It's the way of nature to care about your own survival and perhaps that of your family, yet every day I see people go far beyond that. Whether that's those helping evacuate strangers in Houston with their own boats, teachers who commit their careers to educating other people's kids, or even just someone giving up their seat on the T, I see God's love through these seemingly irrational acts of kindness and compassion. While we aren't perfect and at many times succumb to self-centeredness, fear, willful ignorance, we're also blessed with generosity, hope, and compassion. While the world may be filled with abject poverty, violence, and grief, it's also filled with joy and tender love that seems equally unexplainable. Yet to me, the greatest thing about seeing God's love in acts of compassion is that I don't have to sit around waiting for it to happen. Hurricane Irma is devastating Florida as we speak. 16 million American children woke up this morning uncertain of where their next meal is going to come from. And I passed at least 10 people sleeping outside on the common this morning, an 8-minute walk from this beautiful sanctuary. Yet rather than despairing, I'm left with a deep conviction that the love in this community, in this room right now, can make a difference in the world if we'll only let it shine.
Good morning. I appreciate that Anthony put me in the middle-age category still. I'm not quite a senior citizen, though I will be there soon enough. As a preacher's kid, I was raised within the church, and Christianity has always been an important part of my life. My parents set an example of engaged Christianity, drawing on their faith to inspire their involvement in issues like civil rights, women's rights, and international affairs. I considered following in my father and grandfather's footsteps and becoming a minister. But instead, I chose to get a PhD in political science. But I ended up studying religion and politics as my primary focus. I spent a year in Rwanda studying the churches in the period just before the 1994 genocide there. And then I went back after the genocide as the director of the Human Rights Watch office in Rwanda. I spent months finding out what had happened to many of my friends and the communities I'd lived in and found out about people who had died, others who had survived but were damaged, and others I knew who had participated in the killing. The tragedy that I saw in Rwanda forced me to confront the reality of evil and to realize that we all have the capacity to do terrible things if we get caught up in events and we lose our moral grounding. Even so, my approach to religion has always tended to be more intellectual than really spiritual. It's been more in my head than in my heart over the years. My religion inspires me to remain active in human rights and civil rights, but my passions are careful and thought out. As I'm growing older now, though, with children of my own, I find myself becoming more interested in the spiritual side of religion. I'm not going to become a mystic anytime soon, but I do feel a need to have more time for contemplation, for centering, and being more open to the Spirit to move me. Unfortunately, as a parent of small children, I don't have a lot of time for that. And so I find some of that here at Old South. I find this in the solemnity of our worship service, in the beauty of the music, in our adult education classes. I so rarely find time in my own personal life to sit quietly and reflect and listen to God's voice that it's important for me to carve out this hour at least every week just to come and to not look at my cell phone and to not have to watch my kids, at least not very much. One of them's up there somewhere, hopefully not causing trouble. And not to worry about the daily problems of the world, but to sit and listen and reflect. As I grow older, I hope to carve out more time to be open to the Spirit of God. I'm hoping it doesn't have to wait until my kids are in college, because by then I will be well into my later years. But my faith really is something that, as I age, continues to grow and to change and to deepen. And for that, I need to thank this church. Thank you.
Growing old?
Often. I joined this church and helped to start the young adults group. Benjamin Franklin, who grew up in this congregation, became famous in later life as a scientist, inventor, philosopher, diplomat, patriot, administrator, abolitionist, and statesman. I always knew he could never hold more than one job. As publisher of Poor Richard's Almanac, he is also remembered for his pithy statements. God helps those who help themselves. Never leave that till tomorrow, which you can do today. There never was a good war or a bad peace. Today, the Benjamin Franklin maxim, which I hear most often, is beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. Unfortunately, Ben never said that, although he wrote something similar about wine. Actually, he was talking theologically about Jesus' first miracle, changing the water into wine at Cana. It's represented as the subject of the central window in our north transept. Have you ever noticed, looking up that window, the cross in the center of it, above Jesus' head? So in that one window is represented Jesus' first miracle and also his last and ultimate, Alpha and Omega. However, I would go further than Ben's apocryphal quotation, or even the real one. This glorious world, this entire creation, is proof that God loves each of us and wants us to be happy. I mean, look at someone sitting in front of you. God created the world because God loves that person and wants that person to be happy. Also, God created the world because God loves you and wants you to be happy. It sounds impossible. How could this one world, which we share, be created just for each one of us, so that each one of us would be happy? God knows. In this church, we talk a lot about how we should and might and do respond to God's love. A love that goes far beyond beer and wine to encompass flowers, sunsets, blue skies, oceans and mountains, puppies and smiles, music, sailboats, baseball, forests and cats, I've come to realize that the world is divided into two sorts of people. Those who divide the world into two sorts of people, and those who realize that regardless of color, ethnicity, sexual orientation, education, age, class, ability, nationality, religion, criminal record, sinfulness, or sainthood, there is only one sort of person, the person for whom God created the world because God wanted that person to be happy. And that is every person.